Live on the Logan campus at Utah State University, Utah Public Radio presents a Vote Utah 2012 debate between candidates for Utah's lieutenant governor, Democrat Vince Rampton, and Republican incumbent Greg Bell. Support comes from Utah State University Institute of Government and Politics, dedicated to raising awareness of current political issues and providing internship opportunities for students. And from USU's Department of Political Science, committed to improving the community, the state, the nation, and beyond, and supporting UPR's coverage of the Utah legislature. Information is at politicalscience.usu.edu. Additional support comes from AARP Utah, publishing voter guides for 25 years. Guides and information on state and federal races are available at aarp.org/yourvote or 866-448-3616. We go now to the Evan Stevenson Ballroom in the Taggart Student Center on the USU campus in Logan.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Ray Coward, and it's my pleasure to welcome you all to this important and timely forum and debate. In this time of change and opportunities for the state of Utah, what could be more valuable than an open dialogue between two outstanding Utah residents who are ready to lead our state into the future? We're very pleased to have with us today the current Lieutenant Governor, Greg Bell, and the Democratic challenger, Mr. Vince Rampton. Gentlemen, on behalf of the faculty, staff, and students at Utah State, we welcome you to Logan. I also want to welcome USU students listening across the state through our regional campus and distance education broadcast capabilities. And of course, I also want to welcome the listeners of Utah Public Radio who are tuning into this debate as well. As you may have heard, some of the questions that will be asked today of our candidates were submitted by students and community members prior to this debate, and we're looking forward to hearing the thoughts of each of the candidates on these very important topics. We have three moderators joining us for this debate: Professor Michael Lyons from USU's Department of Political Science, who specializes in elections and electoral politics; former USU student body president Eric Mickelson, who currently sits on the Board of Regents of the Utah System of Higher Education; and our final panelist is Ms. Carrie Brinkhurst, who serves as news director for Utah Public Radio and also is a graduate of Utah State University. Carrie, I'm going to turn the time over to you and ask you to explain the format for today's debate and to begin our discussion.
Thank you, Provost Coward. We appreciate that introduction. And again, on behalf of the moderators, we'd like to welcome the students and those of you listening and watching through our distance education. We'll expect the candidates to come up to the podium, and we'll outline the format of the debate today. Again, this debate will be rebroadcast on Utah Public Radio at 7 o'clock this evening, if you would like to join us for that. We're going to begin, once the candidates arrive on the podium, with an introduction. They'll give us a brief view of the role of Lieutenant Governor, and then we'll begin our questioning. The format today will be 90 seconds to respond to each question, and then we will give 30 seconds for a rebuttal for the candidate who gave the first response. Gentlemen, welcome.
Thank you. My appreciation to President Albrecht and Provost Coward, and to all of you for being here. This is unbelievable. A very fine governor and a very fine father, Calvin Rampton, once told me that there is no greater service short of the ministry that a citizen of this nation can give than to be involved actively in the political process. Clearly, that's why you're here. That is why I'm here and decided to stop making speeches to the shower wall and run for office. I've never done this before, and it's been a very exciting experience for me. Many are uncertain of the duties of the lieutenant governor. He has many responsibilities. I would like, if I go into office, to focus on three areas that are of great importance to me. First, campaign finance reform. There are no regulations in the state of Utah imposing meaningful restrictions on the amount of contributions that can be made to campaigns in the state of Utah. It's something that needs to be brought under control because it has resulted in one-sided government controlled by a powerful few, with the rest of us feeling disenfranchised. Second, I want to see a better effort at voter outreach in the state of Utah. Lieutenant Governor Bell has done a fine job of putting together a website that many of you perhaps have visited. I believe that more can be done and needs to be done. But in addition to that, I believe we need to take greater steps to make sure that voters are not disenfranchised in the state of Utah. That, in my mind, means doing away with the voter ID laws that have disenfranchised over 200,000 citizens in the state of Utah, and also, avoiding the purging of voter rolls for those who have not participated in two cycles. This is a great concern in that it leaves people out of the fundamental law rights of voting. Finally, I would like to see more stringent and effective restraints and regulations imposed on lobbyists who are active on Capitol Hill in the state of Utah. There are too few restraints on their activities. There are too few restraints on how soon after they leave the legislature they can be active there. Those, in a nutshell, are my agenda items. I appreciate being here. I look forward to your questions.
Okay, we'll turn the time now over to Lieutenant Governor Greg Bell for an introduction.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here. Thanks to the university, to Mr. Provost, to all of you for hosting us, for our public radio generating from here. The governor and I often refer to this wonderful institution as a jewel in the crown of our higher education system. The research that comes from Utah State University is just literally space-breaking and groundbreaking. And we're very proud of what is done here, both on the graduate and the undergraduate level. This is a time of decision. I'm sure all of us are getting a little weary of the campaign season and some of the rhetoric, and I'm grateful to participate in this program today, which I hope will lend some depth and a third dimension to the political discussion. I'm grateful to be able to serve the people of Utah. It's truly an honor. The role of the lieutenant governor is somewhat like the vice president, early described as a warm bucket of spit or like kissing your sister. The lieutenant governor's office has actually statutory functions I'll discuss with you today, but mostly it's a partnership with the governor. My peers around the United States as lieutenant governors tend to be ignored and overlooked, but Governor Herbert's number one message is that he wanted to bring in every political and important context in the state of Utah unprecedented partnerships. And he has demonstrated that, and I'll show you that, in various areas of our polity in the last 3 years. And one of those is that I've been the beneficiary of being a partner with the governor and have been given tremendous assignments that have enriched me personally, have exposed me to many, many subjects, and have allowed me to bring my legislative, business, and legal experience to the state to generate policies concerning the environment, energy, particularly education and higher education. We have a vision for the future. You have a governor who has plans that I'm really excited to discuss with you. Thank you.
And thank you, gentlemen, for giving us that quick introduction. Let me just remind you that we do have a timekeeper. If you'll look to your left, she will indicate when your time is up. And I will go ahead and begin with the first question. We discussed before the debate who would begin, who would end, and Lieutenant Governor, you're going to begin with the first question. As you mentioned, one of the roles of Lieutenant Governor is to work with the governor, and Utah Governor Gary Herbert has outlined a plan that 66% of the state's population earn a degree or certificate of higher education. What do you feel can be done to help achieve that, and why is that important?
We have three dynamics that are occurring right now. Number one, many of our employers, especially high-tech employers, are telling us that we're not able to supply the manpower needs that they need. L3 Communications, a large international defense company, has told us that they've had engineering openings through the entire recession. The governor recently solicited them to locate 500 new jobs in the state of Utah. They agreed to do it, but they said, you have to give us more engineers. So we have to do a better job of that. The second dynamic is not everyone needs a college education. But everyone needs something post-secondary. The high school degree is not enough anymore to provide a family wage. So we have to help people with different tracks through our ATCs, professional certificates, apprenticeships, and traditional college to obtain a degree. We have many in the state of Utah who have a lot of college but have never graduated. For very little investment, we can help those folks graduate, have a marketable degree. The third thing is that we now have, quote, the new normal. And the ability to finance higher and public education in former ways is dwindling because the competition for dollars is just so serious. It's a difficulty in setting priorities given restrained tax revenue, so we've got to be very intelligent about how we approach this.
To Mr. Vince Rampton for his response to that question.
Thank you. 66% graduation rate is a laudable goal. It is actually drawn from Prosperity 2020, a program put together by the Salt Lake City Chamber of Commerce. However, the problem with reaching it, as Mr. Bell has suggested, is that there simply isn't the basis. Too many people that arrive at this institution and at any institution of higher learning in the state of Utah come ill-prepared. They simply don't have the basis in the lower schools, and the problem has been lack of funding and lack of proper support of the K-12 program. This has taken place in many instances.
Have a minute, 30 seconds.
That's what I thought. This has been a problem in many instances over time because of the withdrawal of funding gradually from the K-12 program. This needs to turn around. In our administration, Peter Cook and I will see to it that education is properly funded in the state of Utah. It needs to be jacked up to where it was in the levels of 1996 and before. These are problems that have got to be addressed. Also, we need to support the idea of STEM. I keep wanting to say STEM cells, and that's a whole different topic. STEM zones in the K-12 schools so that engineering is infused into the programs at the elementary school level. We also need the kind of support that comes from preschool training. Utah is one of the few states in the union that doesn't have a voluntary preschool attached to the public education system. These all have to be pulled into place in order to permit the schools to generate the kind of graduates that can then come into institutions like this, get the training they need, and be able to fill the jobs that Lieutenant Governor Bell has referred to. Thank you.
Yes, you have 30 seconds for response.
Just to correct the record, the 66 by 2020 is a goal derived from a manpower study by Georgetown University Center on Workforce and has analyzed the jobs in the future of Utah that by 2020 we need 66% of our citizenry, 64 to 20, to have some type of post-secondary education, which I described. Prosperity 2020 is a business coalition come together around the governor's initiative. This is the governor's initiative. It's a 10-year plan by which we can meet our manpower needs. Thank you.
Mr. Rampton, the next question is for you first. In 1968, Utah ranked first among the 50 states in voter turnout, and that turnout has declined steadily. And in recent elections, Utah has been 48th or 49th or even 50th in voter turnout. Why do you think this is occurring, and what might the state of Utah do about this?
The decline in voter turnout has been the product of a number of factors. First of all, we have the concern that I addressed in my opening of learned helplessness among the voters. It has become endemic in this system. The voters of the state of Utah have come to believe that the political process is a function of large, well-funded institutions influencing the outcome of elections through massive advertising campaigns. How many of you here are tired of hearing Mia Love and Jim Matheson bash on each other? Think of what could be done if all those millions of dollars went into a classroom. So the first thing that needs to be done is meaningful election reform. I would propose that as part of that, we place a cap on campaign financing in the state of Utah. This is essential in order to bring the system back into balance. $2,500 per candidate per cycle from any individual. $5,000 per candidate per cycle from any corporation or PAC. This can be done legally, by the way. Most of you have heard about Citizens United. Yeah. They can act independently, and that's fine. But contributions to political campaigns need to be curtailed, and that can be done legally. If we can get that done, people will stop feeling disenfranchised. I would say that's probably the single most important thing that needs to be done. In addition to that, we need some voter outreach. Lieutenant Governor Bell's website is marvelous as a passive resource. We need more. We need to go back to the time when campus outreach programs were proposed by Governor Walker in 2004. We need efforts to bring voters back in and stop disenfranchising them by refusing voter rights if they will not produce picture ID, which 200,000 in the state of Utah cannot do. Those would be my proposals to get it back up.
Thank you. Utah in the last 16 elections has been at the national average on 11 of them. We currently are about 3.7% behind the national average. Our website registered on the last day of online registration 10,000 new voter registrants. In terms of purging voters, we don't purge voters in that sense. If a voter has been inactive, has not either voted in the last 8 years, sometimes up to 12 years, if a voter has not responded to several notices to the address, then they are put in a, their name is put into a holding group. If that voter should show up, he or she may cast a provisional ballot. The registration will be revivified, given effect, and that vote will count. The website is an award-winning website. Our commercials have been award-winning. We've done everything we can. Let me just say that the lowest demographic participating in our public election process is your group. We fought for you to have the vote. If you could die for your country, you could vote for your country. And citizens 18 to 29 are by far the lowest demographic. 18% usually is 18 to 20% is about the participation rate. And I will tell you that we've been organizing voter registration drives on campuses throughout the state, and Utah State now ranks third behind Weber State and Utah Valley University. So it's a function as well of people coming to the polls.
Mr. Rapton, we'll give you 30 seconds to respond, and then Mr. Lyons has a follow-up question.
Very good. The concern is that there are too many that are not voting because they either feel that they are not part of the process or because they feel they cannot influence the process. And it's becoming an epidemic in the state of Utah. It's rampant among minorities, by the way. 129 languages are spoken across the homes of Utah. We don't reach out to the minorities on the voting. Civics is learned behavior. It's something people have to learn how to do. It has to be instilled through education. Governor Walker instituted the College Council on Civic Awareness. That college campus on civic, college council on civic awareness has vanished. It doesn't exist anymore. We need to be more proactive in getting the vote out.
I'd like to follow up, please. Lieutenant Governor Bell, you mentioned that young people have the lowest voter turnout rate, which is statistically correct. When I talk to young people, as I often do in my position here at Utah State, I find over and over they say the problem, the reason they don't turn out more often, is simply that Republicans are almost certain to win every election in the state, in most parts of the state, and we need a more viable and competitive Democratic Party. And I'm curious, and we'll start with Mr. Rampton, what you think the Democratic Party can do better to be more competitive in elections in Utah. And then, Lieutenant Governor, if you could offer your suggestions to the Democrats as to what you think they could do better. You may not want to offer those 1 week before the election here, but we'll give you a shot at it anyway.
The Democratic Party has got to stop being a marginalized institution in the state of Utah. That is the perception. You are absolutely correct that somehow the Democrats are the other party. There are those who believe that the role of the two-party system in the state of Utah is to have two vibrant parties in every election, which the Democrat always loses. That's basically the assumption we have to deal with. The Democratic Party has to break that by several means. First of all, I believe the Democratic Party has to shake off, and I'm sorry to bring this up in a secular institution, has to shake off the misconception that if you're a Democrat, you can't be a good member of the LDS Church. That is a myth. I think it has been busted well in this campaign cycle, but it needs to continue. We also need to point to the importance of a vibrant two-party system in the state of Utah where office holders are checked, give checks and balances against each other. It is critical that that impression be instilled in everyone so they understand that the problem with a one-party system is that it turns into business as usual and nothing gets accomplished except behind closed doors. So the Democratic Party has got to come to grips with these necessities, and the first thing it has to do is produce astounding, fine candidates like my running mate, Peter Cook, whose skills and abilities in industry and in the military are going to transfer beautifully to the governor's office and will be able to serve as a strong and active check and balance against the Republican legislature and bring transparency back to government.
Thank you. First of all, it's not a Republican problem, and I don't. I have a hard time understanding why some people impute that to the Republicans. But secondly, Democrats are in Utah are in a very difficult position because those in Washington have to come here, and the first thing they do is disavow President Obama and Nancy Pelosi. And they also have to disavow the Democratic National platform. The Republicans, over many years, have connected with the citizens of the state of Utah and have become a majority party. I don't think that's a good situation. I wish there were two vibrant parties in the state of Utah. We need balance. We need offset. It's not healthy for someone to have a supermajority. If the Democrats had a bigger participation, I think we'd have a healthier debate about issues, and I think that would stimulate the electoral process. But the Democrats and the Republicans in this time of polarization have to battle their extremes. There's been a fight for the soul of the Republican Party. In the state of Utah, people of mainstream views have prevailed. The Democratic Party has not been so fortunate. And so the great Rampton, McConkie, et cetera, Democratic Party has ceased to exist in that form because I think it's to some degree been kidnapped by the extreme.
Thank you. Mr. Rampton, Senator Revelle, it's great to have you here on our campus. It means a lot to us as students to have you here. My questions are going to focus a lot on student concerns and things that students are worried about. So my first question is about the economy. So students in higher education, our number one underlying goal is, are we going to be able to work when we get out of college? And Lieutenant Governor, you mentioned a lot of engineering jobs that have been created. But my question is, as Lieutenant Governor, what can you do in the executive branch to help to improve Utah's economy and not only get more engineering jobs, but get jobs across the board for everyone as they come out of higher education? So Lieutenant Governor, if you'll respond first.
Well, several things. Thank you for that great question. Number one, we can create an environment in the state of Utah that is friendly and inviting to business. Jobs are what drive America in a free enterprise system. If a family has a sustaining job, then they'll participate in religious activities, they'll participate in charitable activities, political activities. That's the foundation of our society. So we have to have good jobs. Government per se does not create good jobs, but creating an environment with low taxes, sensible regulations, and control on the margins to create a balanced and equal level playing field are what we do. Recently, we had a CEO tell us that he moved his company here because he knew Utah had a stable, conservative, predictable, legal, political, and tax environment. That's what good governors do. That's what a legislature does to make it secure for businesses to come here so that they can provide jobs. Now, the state of Utah has led the nation in the top two or three economies through this recession. As our growth rates have been recalculated, in the last year, we have increased our growth rate, our GDP, almost 0.5% over our average over 50 years. Our unemployment rate is now 5.4% versus the national of 7.8%. And 26 states at this announcement had to announce that their rates had gone up. Our rates have gone down over 2% in the last 3 years.
The job situation currently in the state of Utah and the one facing the people in this room is not quite as rosy as Lieutenant Governor Bell would like you to believe. 90,000 jobs have left this state since 2009. 7.2% out of work. The jobs that have come back are certainly valuable and needed, but they tend to be lower income jobs because of the incentive given to out-of-state companies to come in here and hire local workers by the current administration's promise, which I could show you in one of their own PowerPoint presentations, that Utah is a good source of cheap, well-educated labor. That's our draw. That's our sales pitch. That's a concern to me. We need to start building from the inside out. Now, what do we do about that? We need to start pushing what has been Peter Cook and I have called Utah One, which is a program to build business from the inside out. It's going to involve U-Star. U-Star is a wonderful program started by Governor Huntsman. It's active here on the campus. We'll be touring it this afternoon. I'm excited to see it. But its funding has been cut by 28% since 2007. That needs to be restored. There are supposed to be grants going into the elementary schools to help them out. Then we need to have regional meetings with all seven regions in the state of Utah to hammer out the economic problems getting in the way of local businesses so that they can develop and draw on the technology being created in the universities, commercialize it, and bring to pass a new economy in this state that's homegrown, not brought in from out of state. Thank you.
I'd like a rebuttal, if I might. First of all, the quote, cheap labor, I think was in the context of Goldman Sachs, who was paying people back office wages on Wall Street of $400,000. And so when they move operations to Salt Lake, pardon me, and pay people directly out of school $80,000, 125% of the county median wage, I don't think that's cheap. Those are the good jobs we're looking for. Secondly, the whole purpose of 66% by 2020 is to align exactly with a customized labor pool needed, both graduate, regular four-year degrees, on down the line to technical certificates, with what is coming. No one can make an art history degree all that saleable. We have a limited number of those requirements. And finally, let me just say that U-Star was perhaps signed by the governor, Huntsman, but it was started by the Utah State Senate, of which Senator Bell was a prime mover.
Mr. Rampton, for you first, then for Mr. Bell. Can you, in just one word, describe what kind of a lieutenant governor for the state of Utah you would like to be?
One word?
One word.
I have a minute and a half. The one word would be proactive. As I've indicated, a number of the issues that I see with state government at present need some serious attention from the Lieutenant Governor's office. A good example is lobbying. The lobbyist situation in the state of Utah is a matter of concern. We have fewer regulations, and this is not a Lieutenant Governor Bell's making. It predates him by a long way. Lobbying controls in the state of Utah are extremely, extremely light. They have to register money. They have to register donations. They have to register themselves. They now have to take an ethics course online, which is a good development from last year. But the bottom line is they can move in and out of the legislature and into industry almost with impunity. We are suggesting that there be a 5-year lockout, and I would push this as a matter of regulation and, if necessary, legislation to see to it that the lobbyists in the state of Utah perform the function they're supposed to, and that is to inform the legislatures, to enlighten them, not to peddle influence because they have friends in the legislature, not to be able to make vast contributions under exceptions to the general rule of $10 per legislator per day. That should be the rule no matter what the nature of the contribution. These people should be there to help out, help the legislators understand their job, but not to create influence in the legislative chambers. I would like to see that happen through regulation, if necessary, through legislation that I would press. That's one example. That's all I have time to give.
Mr. Bell.
Thank you. The word I would pick would be visionary. The governor and I need to stand on the mountaintop. We need to see what's coming. We need to understand the trends, the major trends in our lives. And never in your young lives, nor in my somewhat longer life, have I seen a time of greater change, greater disruption, and greater opportunity. But it will not be through the same old measures that we solve our problems. First of all, As I mentioned, it's new normal. I talked to the CEO of one of our major companies in the state of Utah recently, and he said, through this recession, I cut about 20% of my expenses. My revenues are back where they once were, but I will not restore those jobs because I found out I could function without them. Our companies are being compressed. Middle management is a thing of the past, and business is having to cope with new pressures. Therefore, government does. Our tax revenue is going to be very, very limited, except as we grow jobs, as we grow the pie. We are a low-tax state, but in some senses, we are taxed enough. And the reason we've grown so much is because of our tax policies. If we start raising our taxes like Illinois and California, we'll lose jobs by the droves. So I want you to hear Mr. Rampton's proposal, Mr. Cook, great men, but the basic premise of what they propose is either they have to cut out courts and parks and everything government does to get the increases they need, or they raise taxes.
Raising taxes is not an option in a time of difficulty, which is one you're going to be coming into. So that's a misrepresentation of our position. We're not seeking to raise taxes. We're seeking to reallocate existing revenues. And it can be a challenge. It can be a very difficult situation to deal with. But there are places that we can look. Are you aware, for instance, that of sales tax alone in the state of Utah, nearly $300 million per year is earmarked for transportation? More roads. We have a 30-year road plan. We have no education plan to go with it. Now, money needs to be moved back to places where it makes more sense. That's the way we're going to grow jobs, and I would like to be a part of that.
Gentlemen, I'm going to redirect a little bit. We're going to talk about public lands issues for a minute. The current administration has signed a bill that has authorized Utah to file eminent domain proceedings against federally owned land, much of that here in Utah. How or will the acquisition of these lands benefit public education? And we'll begin with you, Lieutenant Governor Bell.
I'm not confident that a bill granting eminent domain to the state of Utah passed. The bill we've really been working on, HB 148, is Representative Ivory's bill. And it had various permutations about trying to tax federal lands, et cetera, et cetera. But the responsible outcome of that has been this, that we have a constricted ability to tax because the federal government, Indian reservations, et cetera, control about 70% of our land. In New York, Iowa, Florida, their percentage of federal lands would be less than 5%. So you can see that apart from the Wasatch Front and a few little islands, the federal government owns our land and controls our land, and we receive very, very little for it. So the proposal under HB 148, first of all, is to do a study to find out what would be the benefits if Utah were to take over the management of the land. At our founding, the Organic Act of Utah, it said that the lands were to be sold and that Utah would, for the benefit of the school children, retain 5%. We don't want to sell those lands and keep only 5%. Our pitch to the federal government would be, let us manage them. We know them. We love them. We can do it better. We can do it more effectively than you, and we'll manage them better. Now, included in that are not the national parks, national monuments. These are the BLM grounds where there's grazing and what people would see in the desert.
Okay, Mr. Rampton.
Governor Bell needs to read HB 148. It starts with the demand that by midnight on December 31st, 2013, the federal government will cede to the state of Utah title to all federal lands within the state of Utah's boundaries, except those that consist of national parks and the other exceptions that are stated. Millions of acres we have made demand on the federal government to turn over. They're not going to do it. It has certainly been made clear that eminent domain is an option to pursue this, even though the Office of Legislative Counsel's own opinion is that it's an unconstitutional provision. This wasn't a solution. This was a message bill trying to suggest that we need to take back our federal lands. It was tried in 1979 in Nevada, and it went nowhere because the federal government said no, and no court action succeeded. This is not a solution. Even if the lands were to come back to us, the bill does nothing but make a plan to try to figure out what to do with this land. And the concern, of course, is that it will be at the mercy of developers to whom it will be sold, and then 95% of the proceeds go back to the federal government anyway. Where's the money for education? It doesn't exist. This is not a solution to any problem that's facing the state of Utah, and earmarked are $3 million to go after it. It doesn't make sense. It should be abandoned. I do credit the state for initiating some alternative discussions with the federal government. The place to go with this sort of thing is to come up with negotiated agreements concerning use of federal lands for the benefit of the state. And this is being done in many other contexts in the state of Utah and elsewhere. But it's a different direction than the state is taking right now. Declaring war on the federal government to get land back that we have no plan to manage and can't use effectively is not a solution.
Let me just respond by saying that Utah is a sovereign and a federalist system. That's been largely forgotten. Utah, like our 49 sister states, has certain rights and perquisites as a sovereign. And there's nothing writ in law. In fact, the presumption of the law would be to the opposite, that states west of the Rocky Mountains should not control their public lands when states east of the Rocky Mountains have virtually no restrictions. In North Dakota, the most burgeoning economy in the United States, they are developing oil and gas resources at a record pace on private land because they don't have the government burden of moving forward at some kind of political restricted rate.
You both mentioned a lot of rapid change that's happening around the nation and especially in Utah. And that rapid change is affecting higher education a lot. And as students in Utah, we're very interested in Utah's higher education remaining competitive around the nation. So one of the things that's interested students as well as the Board of Regents is the issue of a model of governance for higher education. So as universities transition over time, how do you see the model of governance changing? Is it going to be governed by the Board of Regents, Boards of Trustees, the governor, the legislature, or the university presidents? So Mr. Rampton, if you would like to go first.
I believe that the current method of governance at the universities in the state of Utah that's developed over time has recommended itself very well. I think that's something we need to continue. I am concerned that we not get into constitutional problems in that regard because the governance of education is constitutionally vested, of course, in a state board and then also in the Board of Regents. So these are issues that need to be examined and streamlined to the extent that we can legally do so in order to cut costs. And one of the avenues that will come out of that will be something largely unrelated to your question, I acknowledge, but the question of expanding the influence and direction of classes and classwork and student bodies through internet classes and other cost-cutting measures that technology can bring to bear. But I am confident in the ability of the current State Board of Regents to accomplish that in a meaningful fashion. So that would be my response.
The governor and I are not advocating any change in the governance structure of higher education. We have wonderful people like you who sit on the Board of Regents, and they do an excellent job. They work closely with the governor. We've really appreciated the partnership of higher ed in developing the 66 by 2020 goal because they have a huge role to play in that as educating not only engineers but people across the spectrum. And they've worked together well. We have a unity of operation that really has not been witnessed, I think, in the last 20 years, at least in my public service time. So I'm delighted with the direction of things. In the spirit of unprecedented partnerships, the governor has gathered around a table a group of people I did not think would ever even sit together. His Education Excellence Commission has university professors, members of the Board of Regents, the UEA, Teacher of the Year, Parents for Choice who want vouchers, homeschoolers. We have 35 people sitting at this table. Contrary to the experience of prior governors, the governor attends every single minute of these four-hour meetings. We have introduced to the legislature 22 initiatives, very important initiatives, all but one of which have been funded, enacted, and put in place. And you will see more and more come out of this kind of collaborative effort with the universities, our public school system, and our business community as well.
Mr. Rath, would you like to respond?
I do. I unfortunately have to take issue with the Lieutenant Governor's characterization of the current administration as a great partner in higher education. public funding of higher education in the state dropped from 76.5% in 1985 to 63.5% in 2012. For fiscal year 2012, budget cuts in higher education funding were made of 2.5%, with the governor saying they can make the rest of it up out of their tuition. The legislature was asked for $64 million for higher ed this year. The governor budgeted $16 million, and they finally passed $21 million. We need to make sure that education in the state of Utah, both at the higher ed level and the K-12 level, is adequately funded, or governance will have increasingly fewer resources to work with and increasing inability to serve a burgeoning student body population.
Up on this. This deserves more time.
Let's go ahead and let you continue the conversation.
Thank you. I think most of you are aware that we've had a great recession and that every institution has been hit very, very hard. Every state agency in the state of Utah has been cut a minimum of 25% in the last 5 years. We have essential operations that have cut to the bone. It's very, very difficult, but we have prioritized. Public education has sustained almost no cut whatsoever. Higher education sustained about a 12% cut. Why? Because Governor Herbert fought diligently and manfully. Let me tell you, I was there. I watched the mud wrestle, and it was not pretty, but because of his courage and putting stakes in the ground, we avoided larger cuts to higher education and public education. Everyone has to share in this. And now, as I mentioned the CEO that I talked about, we have got to find ways to do what this university does so well in a less costly way.
Okay, let's, Mr. Rampton, give you a minute.
Public education has not been cut as much as some of the others because under the Constitution, the Utah state government is mandated to fund it. And yet, if you look at the budget, over time, money has come out of higher education that was taken from public education by reason of a 1996 amendment in order to fund higher education, and then higher education's general budget, general funding has been taken out in a commensurate amount to build roads, more roads so that we can have more internal combustion engines with single drivers commuting up and down the Wasatch Front, creating the environmental problems that, of course, we will all know about and probably will talk about here in a few minutes. There were other ways to do this. There were other ways that should have been explored that will be explored with Governor Cook. That would be my response.
Obviously, this is a hot-button topic, and we do want to continue conversation on this, but we want to also give you an opportunity to grab a drink, and we need to take a station identification break as we are broadcasting this live on Utah Public Radio. Again, this is a debate between candidates for Utah's Lieutenant Governor, Democratic candidate Vince Rampton, and Republican incumbent Greg Bell. This is KUSR HD1, KUSK HD1, KUSL HD1, KUST HD1, and KUSU FM HD1. Support for the broadcast here comes from Utah State University Institute of Government and Politics, dedicated to raising awareness of current political issues and providing internship opportunities for students. We also are receiving support for this debate from USU's Department of Political Science, committed to improving the community, the state, the nation, and beyond, and supporting UPR's coverage of the Utah Legislature. Information is at politicalscience.usu.edu. And from AARP Utah, publishing voter guides for 25 years, guides and information on state and federal races are available at aarp.org/yourvote or 866-448-3616. I'm Carrie Bringhurst. I'm news director at Utah Public Radio, and joining me as moderators for this next portion of the debate are Eric Mickelson. He's former USU student body president and student regent on the Utah Board of Regents. That's a current position there. And along with us is USU political science professor Michael Lyons, who specializes in elections and electoral politics. And we're going to turn to him now to ask the next question.
Yes, Lieutenant Governor, I'd like to follow up and continue our discussion here. I think in your last answer, you mentioned that we need to find less costly ways to do things in reference to the university. And I'm curious what suggestions you would have or how we would proceed in the university to do things in a less costly way. And, well, I'll leave it at that.
Great question, and frankly, Mr. Rampton mentioned this, but for many years, the state of Utah has been a leader in encouraging and providing internet-based education. Now, we find that a lot of college courses, and the students here would know better than we, are providing mixed classes, partly with a teacher, partly in a lab physically, but also many of the lecture parts delivered by internet. Now, that could allow some things. We have duplication across campuses, and ultimately we're not going to be able to afford that, particularly as resources grow tight. The backed up building needs in our higher education system is over $1 billion. It's just choking. And so we obviously have to do some workarounds. Now, Mr. Rampton says that we're constitutionally mandated to provide a free education. That's right. But it doesn't mandate any funding level. And through the Herbert Bell administration, we have maintained funding levels that really were under threat by the legislature. Let me also say that I feel your pain on tuition. Our state has maintained a 50-50 balance, 50% state funding, average 50% tuition funding. Your tuition has gone up to make it almost, very difficult to afford, and I'm sorry for that. But in perspective, we realize that among state-funded universities, our tuition is second least expensive in the nation. And so we're doing all we can to keep that affordable so that we can have people graduating with great careers.
Mr. Rampton.
As I already mentioned, one of the prime ideas that I would like to see pursued at the higher education level is the expansion of class sizes and class involvement and class access through internet classes. That can turn your campus into a worldwide institution. Enrollment can be brought up by that basis, and cost containment can be promoted by that. That's one idea that I think is very valuable. Another would be to move burden of university education to some degree back down toward the K-12 level by standardizing K-12 and higher education graduation standards and permitting brighter students in the high schools and even the junior highs to participate in college-level courses for college-level credit. We can homogenize the process at least to some degree and move people through the system faster, get them out into the job force more quickly.
Let me just counter by saying this. Two things. The governor and I have battled to have a new curriculum upheld as voted in by the State Board of Education called the Utah Core. The Utah Core is a more aggressive, college-ready, career-ready curriculum approved by your universities. Previously, we've had too many graduates come out of our high schools who needed remediation in math and English. I'm sure none of you were among that, but some were. Now we have a curriculum that will deliver students who are ready for college, ready for careers, and that's an important move that's happened in the last year.
Thank you. So we've talked about the 66% goal and all the reforms in higher education, the changes we're facing, and the increased pressure on the economy and on funding. So my question is, where do you find the balance between students funding all the innovations with tuition or the state coming in and funding that? I know that education is going to come forward with a bold proposal this year for funding increases from the legislature to help reach that 66% goal. But where do you see that balance between state funding and student funding through tuition or even lowering costs? Who's first to say?
Yes, it would be Lieutenant Governor.
Yeah. Last year, because of the return of our economy and the increase in jobs, we were able to add new money to higher and public education, $200 million. That's new money. Now, given the very difficult times we've had, that is wonderful news. Most states are not able to maintain current levels of funding, let alone add money. And this year, it will probably be about the same. And I think we'll have a good look at an increase in higher education. We want tuition growth to slow. We want the state to increase its burden, its contribution toward the expense of university education. Your campus as a model. You have outreach throughout the state. Your new teaching center, $14 million, I think, funded by students, reaches throughout the state of Utah, where people in Price and Teasdale and Brigham throughout the entire state are getting a wonderful education, a Utah State education. Secondly, you look at this marvelous little campus in Price, Utah, proud as can be to have the USU brand. And now we have 2,000 students. The chancellor's trying to get 4,000 students in Price, 4,000 students in San Juan. We see exciting things, and these can be less expensive educations because they don't have the same overhead burden and because much of this program can be delivered via internet.
This is one area where you'll not hear a lot of disagreement between Lieutenant Governor Bell and myself. I see the efficiencies that are coming up in the future from technology and from expansion of classroom programs as a primary area in which costs can be contained. But the fact is, they're going to keep going up because we have more and more students coming into our institutions of higher learning every year. One of the most important things that we can do is to focus on avoiding and eliminating the remediation requirements that we're currently facing by students who arrive at the doorsteps of our public institutions of higher learning ill-equipped because public funding in the lower schools was insufficient to deliver the proper education they needed to get ready for college. So that's step number one. Number two, we need to be focusing on getting back into the system the money that has been bled out of the higher education budget by reason of general fund allocations elsewhere in the state's budget that has resulted in the drastic drops in higher education budgets in the state in recent years. We simply have to reverse that trend, recognize that it should not have been done when it was in the 1990s when there was plenty of money for everyone, and then not reversed when the recession hit. We've got to focus on getting funding levels back up where they belong. But even at that, here's the bad news. I think tuitions are going to go up. I have never seen tuitions go down in my life, so that's one of the brutal facts that we're going to have to deal with in higher education. However, funding sources from other sources, including your own fabulous $1.5 billion fund drive, which recently concluded, and good on everybody in here for doing that. That's going to contribute a great deal, but it's going to be a battle.
And did you want to do a rebuttal on that? Let's now go to talking about grades, but this time let's have you grade what you would give the state of Utah for its openness and transparency of government. And what is the role, do you think, of the lieutenant government to ensure a transparent government? And we'll begin with you, Mr. Rampton.
I've already addressed what I believe to be the lieutenant governor's role in creating and fostering transparency in government. I believe that full, fair elections based on rational standards rather than on who can spend the most money on cable television and other methods of advertising needs to be put in place so the elections can become really what we're seeing here today, a rational discussion between opponents about issues and purposes to let the voters make up their mind. That kind of transparency is only going to come at the cost of eliminating the money train that is currently driving the electoral process. Excuse me. I also believe that we need to focus very carefully on the initiative and referendum process in the state of Utah. This is a matter of concern for me as a lawyer. I've seen the problems that have arisen in initiatives trying to present their petitions to the state of Utah to be turned away because they wouldn't take e-signatures, which every other entity in the state government and commerce have long since recognized as valid. The people have the right to make laws in the state of Utah just like the legislature does, and I believe that needs to be fostered and encouraged, and that's one of the responsibilities of the Lieutenant Governor's office. If petitions to place matters on the ballot for determination by the people are met with skepticism and are met with challenges that make it more difficult to get matters before the voters, I believe that's a blow against openness and transparency in government that needs to be addressed. Thank you.
So, Lieutenant Governor, transparency in government, your thoughts?
Thank you. Well, of course, the governor and I share a deep commitment to transparency. We have nothing to hide. It's government by the people, of the people, for the people, and there are very few things that the public shouldn't be aware of. And if you get on Utah's transparency website, you'll be able to discover levels of detail that will choke you to death. There sometimes are a few things that are highly politicized, but the governor and I always default in terms of disclosure. Let me just say, with reference to referenda and initiative petitions, the Constitution of the State of Utah, as mentioned, does share the legislative power between the legislature and the people. There are, however, extremes. On the one hand, you want the people to bring forward good, well-debated referenda and initiatives. For instance, when the legislature voted in favor of the voucher bill, the citizenry had a referendum and rejected that law. That was a wonderful, robust discussion. On the other hand, we have California, that is government by referenda, which is government by advertising. And so the governor of California, when he takes office, when she first decides to set the budget, has 65% of the money off the table by referenda. It's no way to run a railroad. So somewhere between there is a happy medium. I think we found that. We've had successful initiatives. We want not to burden them, but I think we're about right.
And Mr. Rampton, did you want to comment?
I believe that the lieutenant governor needs to be an advocate for the electoral process, for placing issues before the voters. I'm the first to acknowledge that some of the referenda that have come out of states in years past have been less than advisable. Some have been downright goofy. But that's part of the democratic process, and it needs to be fostered, it needs to be encouraged. E-signatures are now under examination. The Lieutenant Governor Bell or whoever is in the office come that time doesn't have to look at them until September 2013. What's the holdup? There simply doesn't need to be this mentality of putting a roadblock in the way of letting the people decide their own laws, whatever the outcome may be.
I believe we want to save some time for closing statements, so I think this will be our last question. And I think it goes to Lieutenant Governor Bell first. Lieutenant Governor Bell, what do you like most about living in the state of Utah? And what is the one thing that Utah needs to do to improve its quality of life?
Thank you. That's a wonderful question. I love the state of Utah because, as a poll taken by Envision Utah discovered, that people come here or stay here, continue to live here for two reasons. Number one, we connect to the environment. We love Utah's mountains, lakes, streams, valleys, dams, the physical landscape, both built and unbuilt. And secondly, we relate to the value system that Utah has. Utah, since the Olympics, as though a key were turned, has emerged from among the other states because, A, our fiscal policies, our conservative budgeting policies have kept us in the forefront. The Wall Street Journal said that the state of Utah has the brightest star in the crown of the United States. Why? Because we've emerged with common sense policies that Utah's always done. It's nothing new. It's nothing secret. It's that other states have departed from proven rational formulas. We are one of seven states that has a AAA bond rating bond rating agencies. So it's a wonderful place to live. As chair of Envision Utah, I've helped community after community plan their built environment, plan their transit. We've installed 70 miles of transit in the last 7 years, one of the most aggressive transit building programs in the United States. We have a first-class system, and we have a first-class state.
Mr. Rampton?
For those of you who are out-of-staters, get comfortable for a brief history lesson. Utah, as it now stands, was settled by two waves of immigrants. The Mormon pioneers that came here starting in 1847 to establish this as a home for religious liberty, and the builders of railroads and the diggers of mines that came here in later years to establish a non-Mormon community and culture in this state. Those two elements have come together in the 21st century to build one of the most remarkable, most dynamic, and most constructive populace mixes imaginable. If you ask me why I want to stay in the state of Utah, and apparently Mr. Bell and I are going to be here for a while, why I want to stay is because of the diversity and the vibrancy of the populace in this state. The people are remarkable. I don't know how many of you are from out of state, but if you can graduate from here and stick around to get a job, you will love it. I also love the beauties of nature, that exist in this state. I want to preserve those, preserve them for everyone, including the tourists that come in and contribute so much to our tourism industry. But we need to move forward as a state with a vibrant vision of the future. We can't keep making decisions based on models that worked in the past when we were half the size that we are now and a tenth of the size that we'll be in 50 years, because the population of this state is going to continue to burgeon. We need to be ready to deal with those problems, to preserve what we have, but by doing it in new and innovative ways. That's what Peter Cook and I are looking forward to being part of.
Lieutenant Governor Bell, I didn't feel as if you explained what you think Utah needs to improve and what we can do to improve the quality of life here. Could we follow up and ask you that?
Well, thank you. The economy is what seems to breed all good things. It breeds more taxes for education, for public purposes. We need to grow our economy. There's no doubt about it. And it's a race. It's a race with the world. It's a race with other states. And we have started a major effort. The reason we have 2.5% lower unemployment is because the federal rates are because of discouraged workers falling out of the workforce. The reason ours is so low is because we created new jobs. Yeah, we lost a lot of jobs during the recession, but that's no secret. That was just part of what happened in every state, in every nation. But real jobs have been restored. So as the governor and I continue to work on this, economic development, first-class education system, a 10-year strategic energy plan, you will see that Utah will maintain its status as the brightest star in the firmament of the United States of America.
Mr. Rampton, do you have some comments on that?
I do. What needs to be done to improve the quality of life in Utah? A wonderful philosopher by the name of Eric Hoffer once said about the human soul the following: it is the stretched soul that makes music, and souls are stretched by the pull of opposites, opposite tastes, predilections, yearnings, and longings. Where there is no such polarity, where all energies flow smoothly in one direction, there will be much doing, but no music. The state of Utah needs a dynamic renovation and renaissance in its political structure so that there's the give and take of a meaningful two-party system, checks and balances between the governor's office and the legislature. Candidly, those have been missing for a very long time now. The state has been moving stolidly in one direction under the governance of one party, and that can't continue. We need to have the vibrancy that existed in the 1970s and 1980s in this state when it grew so quickly and so beautifully under the governance of two parties, both of them strong, both of them active. That's what needs to happen.
Okay. We actually have time for another question. So we'd like to get to know a little bit more about your personalities a little bit. So my question would be, who's going first this time?
Mr. Rampton.
If you were stranded on an island and you could have three things with you, what would you have and why?
If I'm stranded on a desert island and I can have three things, what would they be? One of them is sitting right behind you. It would be my wife, Janice. Janice and I have been married for a very long time. We have, you want to get to know me? Here you go. We have seven children. We started this year with three grandchildren. We're going to finish it with seven grandchildren. And everybody's here, and they're all fine. So when you say, I want three things, you've already left out an awful lot of important elements. But if we're talking things instead of people, I'd have to say that what I would really like in my personal life to be with me on stranded on a desert island would probably be LDS scriptures, because I am an active member of the LDS Church, and that would be something that's quite important to me. I would want to have a good supply of Coca-Cola. Not the diet stuff, I'm sorry. And I would want to have my iPad in full function, because it has my entire library on there.
So you'd have it for a couple days, and then it dies.
Yeah, I left out the generator, didn't I? Okay. It's a fanciful question. I gave you a fanciful answer.
Okay. Lieutenant Governor.
Thank you. Likewise, I would have Jolynn with me. Life wouldn't be anywhere near the same without her. And I'm hoping like Mr. Ampton, to have the internet so I can have the scriptures and other books, and I would die without graham crackers.
Do you need milk with those?
True. Oh, absolutely.
Okay. All right.
We can let you have both of those.
Well, gentlemen, it's been a pleasure. We do want to give you 90 seconds to make your closing remarks. And since we began with Mr. Rampton first, we will close with Mr. Bell.
No, it was the other,
it was
way,
the other way around. Okay. So, Mr. Rampton, 90 seconds to state your closing remarks.
Utah has come to a very interesting place in its history. It has some decisions to make. In another time, a great leader, by the way, a Republican, faced a time of great change. Abraham Lincoln in 1863 was facing a presentation of the Emancipation Proclamation to a largely hostile Congress. And in December of that year, he wrote them a letter. It contained the following words: "The dogmas of the quiet past are inadequate to the stormy present. The occasion is piled high with difficulty, and we must rise to the occasion. As our case is new, so we must think anew and act anew. We must disenthrall ourselves, and then we shall save our country. Utah has many wonderful qualities. It has, however, been a one-party state with one voice singing one tune for far too long. It is time for the business as usual to end. It is time for a dynamic leader to come into the State House and offer a differing point of view, new and fresh visions. That leader is Peter Cook. I look forward to serving with him in the State House for the next 4 years. Thank you so much for the time you've given us today. You're a credit to the campus for sitting here. Thank you very much.
And Lieutenant Governor Greg Bell.
Thank you. Thank you again for hosting us. Thank you for attending on this hour where you could be doing other things. Thanks to General Cook and Mr. Ampton for a well-run and stimulating campaign. Like you, I'm excited for this season to draw to a close so we can go back to watching soap operas and not commercials. Utah does have a bright future, but again, it has to be a future done in different ways with different tools. We have to think differently. We have to be smarter, and that's just the way life is going to be. The governor has started out, Governor Herbert, by saying, "I seek unprecedented partnerships." I think I've detailed for you today how he's brought people together in the higher and public education community, including our ATCs, to work together for a 10-year plan to get our workforce to be the most educated, best responsive to job alignment in the United States and in the nation. Secondly, we have developed a 10-year strategic energy plan consistent fortuitously with Mitt Romney's intention to have energy independence in North America. We have set as our goal economic development, from which great jobs grow, from which a good education will grow as well. And then finally, we have put stakes in the ground relative to our role as a state in the federalist universe with the United States of America, we being a sovereign state. Gary Herbert and I are not very political, and I think we've run a very bipartisan government. We intend to reach out to all parties on a continuing basis. Thank you.
And we want to thank you both for taking the time to come to the Cache Valley and be with us here on the campus at Utah State University, Lieutenant Governor Greg Bell and Vince Rampton, excuse me, candidates for Lieutenant Governor here in the state of Utah. Thank you so much for joining us. A few more thanks and welcome those who have made the facilities available to us today, and also the College of Humanities and Social Sciences for providing this as part of their common hour, the Institute of Government and Politics here at Utah State University, and some of the background thanks going to our engineer friend Weller and Shalane Smith Needham, And also we want to thank those of you in the audience, those here at the Taggart Student Center, also in our distance education and regional campus facilities, and also our listeners on Utah Public Radio. And I want to thank moderators Eric Mickelson and Mike Lyon also for joining me. And thanks, everyone, again, for taking part in this debate today.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for Utah Public Radio's broadcast of a debate between candidates for Utah's lieutenant governor. Support comes from USU's Department of Political Science, committed to improving the community, the state, the nation, and beyond, and supporting UPR's coverage of the Utah legislature. Information is at politicalscience.usu.edu. And from Utah State University Institute of Government and Politics, dedicated to raising awareness of current political issues and providing internship opportunities for students. Additional support comes from AARP Utah, publishing voter guides for 25 years. Guides and information on state and federal races are available at aarp.org/yourvote or 866-448-3616.